So I opened my big mouth and I was asking a big question right before the break. You know, I'm still a rookie at this. You know, but I think we're almost to my 1 year thing doing this whole. We're pretty close. Anyway, so I was asking John Shelton here, who's a professor at UWGB, and with my brother John Becker. How do we take these ideas that do make sense and share them across the fruited plains while still trying to, because what we have to do is get those people that are in the middle.
Yeah. Look,
okay. I think Wisconsin showed that.
Yeah. Okay. So look, here's the thing. Elections are very complicated. People vote on along a number of different dimensions, right? But I think my big argument is that we need to focus on economic security more, right? And that doesn't have to be the only thing that we focus on. We need to focus on it. We need to have a narrative around it. And I think sometimes we have these ideas, you're referencing purple, you know, ideas. Economic security is a purple idea. It's actually something that even people who vote Republican can get behind. And I'll give you a good example of that. You know, I mentioned before that I ran for city council and I ran against Bill Galvin, four-time incumbent. Bill's a great guy. I think we had a very good election.
That was cool.
I lost by 43 votes.
Oh, okay? Wow.
Against a four-time incumbent.
That's impressive.
I had no business doing that well. And the reason I did is because I knocked a lot of doors and I talked to people about what they cared about. And you know, want to know the number one thing that I heard, right? I had a few different things that I kind of was talking about that were important to me. By the end of the campaign, the only thing I was talking about was housing, because that was what resonated with people. And my district is very diverse in terms of race and socioeconomic status. But across the board, you know, there were people who had adult children living with them because they couldn't afford housing. There were military vets. I stopped and you know, one day, shouldn't admit this on air, but whatever, I had a smoke with a military vet who like couldn't afford to stay in his apartment. Mm. And he was like, "You're the first person who I've ever talked to who like actually talked about this issue of housing and like affordable housing in a way that actually made sense to me." And one of the things I was talking about was why it is that people don't have good housing. And it's not because that housing is like the weather. It's because corporations in this country, investment companies are buying up properties and either jacking up the rents or just keeping them unavailable. In Green Bay, for example, like Airbnb companies that are buying properties and using them for Airbnbs. And so like you can talk about those things and those things resonate with people if you do it in the right way and you don't lecture them about why they didn't go and get the right college degree, right? Mm-hmm. Or like the things they've done wrong to be in a deeply unfair economy. And so like with Rebecca Cook, I mean, she came very close to winning. Katrina Shanklin, who ran against her, was a good friend of mine, so I was supporting her in the primary. But I would have liked to have seen Rebecca Cook actually do more to push for big economic security issues, right? I mean, like you can be big on these things and they resonate with people. You just look at polling. When you talk about things like guaranteeing people the right to a job and housing and doing something about for-profit healthcare that takes advantage of people, all these things poll really well. We just don't talk about them the right way. We don't talk about them in a way that resonate with voters. We've got to do more of that.
One of the questions that's popped into my head as I've been reading your piece and in our conversation is you know, I think about the just incredible asymmetry between the right and the left in this country in terms of how the right, they have spent decades and decades. They play the long game better than anyone on everything from building up an entire media echo chamber ecosystem to amplify lies and disinformation and spin.
Absolutely.
They've invested in think tanks to, quote unquote, think tanks to advance their policies. They have attacked public education and sort of mounted up their own schools, their own private colleges to funnel folks. They have an entire infrastructure in place to attack and undermine these sort of common sense progressive ideals and policies that the majority of Americans support. How do you know? And whereas the left so often we get into our circular firing squad mode, and like you said, attacking folks for not doing the right thing or imposing our purity litmus test and things like that. How do you have any thoughts about how like the left might be able to be more effective in counteracting that? Because I really do think that we need to build some kind of infrastructure to if we're ever going to get through to people with these common sense policies and break the stranglehold. How do we do that when we're up against such a behemoth?
It's a great question. I would say two things. I mean, one, you know, the right has these infrastructures and what they can put into them is money. right? I mean, that's the advantage that the right has. But we have these infrastructures already. They're called unions, right? I mean, like institutions that can bring people together around economic interests. The biggest, aside from being home, right? The place that most Americans spend the most part of their day, we're vastly the most overworked industrial nation in this world, is at work. Absolutely. And so when we join together around a common narrative and common explanation for what it is that is actually making our economy and our world to be unfair, then we can build that infrastructure quite rapidly, actually. And so that's number one. Number two is, and I'm not talking about like Democrats in Green Bay. I'm talking about here Democrats nationally. We have to stop trying to like out corporate America, the Republicans. Right. Like as Neil and I wrote very explicitly in the piece, Americans can either continue to accommodate corporate America or they can win elections, but they can't do both because the right is always going to do a better job of that than us. And so, like, you know, I think that doesn't mean that you have to like be anti-business and everything that you say. But like, you know, when Kamala Harris came to Green Bay, she talked a lot about small business. Small businesses are fine. They're great. Most people don't work in small businesses. They have a boss. They have a boss who exploits them and makes them, you know, work crazy hours and you know, doesn't pay into their retirement benefits, right? Or like Starbucks, when you've had 500 Starbucks companies or retail outlets that have voted to unionize, they drag their feet and don't actually negotiate with them. I mean, these are the people doing all of the actual work that makes Starbucks profitable, and the corporation is like, no, we're just not going to do it. So Democrats have to like take the side of the working people, right? They have to do that. And that's actually in the long run how you're going to change things.
Well, and I think, you know, being a small business person, I think small business and working, we're pretty much the same. I mean, yeah. I don't
work your ass off.
Yeah. I don't make more than I did when I worked for someone. But the difference is, you know, I tell my employees, don't work over 40 hours a week. Be home with your family. I give them the best health insurance plan that we possibly can. I pay more than any other company would. I do these things because I know that if I treat my employees right, I'm going to get the best and the brightest people to come here. And as long as they're treated right, treated fairly and paid well, we'll be fine.
We need more small business owners like you, brother.
Right. Well, but like, you know, talking to the working person and talking to a small business owner really can be the same thing. It's the same conversation, you know?
Yeah, no, 100%. But my only point is that Kamala made a big point of coming here and like emphasizing small business.
Right, right. Yeah, well, and it's such a tough thing to know where to go with this. You know what I mean? What's going to win? Because you can't govern if you can't win.
That's right.
Nancy Pelosi says, just win, baby.
Okay. let me ask you this, though. I'm going to ask you seriously.
Yeah.
If you said that Democrats nationally, what is our three-sentence explanation for what we do as a party?
What would I say? A three-sentence?
Yeah.
Mine?
Yeah.
I would say we empower people by doing the right thing and treating people with equity and justice. That's really what it is. I mean, what this show is. It's not left versus right. It's right versus wrong.
Yeah.
And Democrats are more right than they are wrong.
Building opportunities for all Americans, including marginalized Americans.
I think my point is that the right has had that down.
Yes.
For such a long time, right? We're gonna lower taxes. We're gonna get government off your back, and bring Christianity into these moral values, right? Like. And so
which goes back to the how do you sell it piece.
And so I think what I'm saying is that all the stuff you're saying is true, Mark. That's why I'm a Democrat. I'm a proud Democrat. Right? Yeah. But we need to have a very, very clear narrative and message. And again, stick to it, right? That connects to our history as Democrats, right? Like, are we Bill Clinton?
Right.
Who, you know, again, like told Republicans that he would make sure that they got reelected if they supported NAFTA? Or are we FDR? who, as we wrote in the piece, you know, who had a mill worker write to him and say, we finally have a man in the White House who understands my boss is a son of a right?
But then I think, you know, you look at some of the other issues and it's looking here in Wisconsin, and you wrote another piece about Act 10 and how, you know, how horrific that was for public schools. People have no idea how damaging that and their, you know, the school choice and vouchers and all
especially
of that.
Especially in rural areas.
Oh my God. Yes. Where I am in Pulaski, we are crushed here in Green Bay. They are crushed by that. You see tens of millions of dollars coming out of Green Bay Public Schools budget. And then the public gets pissed because, you know, hey, we need help.
There's a reason. And there's a reason that Walker went for that first.
Right.
When they got into power.
Oh my God. Yeah. You were there.
Breaking. And, yes. Oh yes. Driving. I was just finishing up grad school in Milwaukee and driving back and forth between Milwaukee and Madison, banging on drums at the Capitol during the occupation and things like that. Like there is a reason that he wanted to break the backs of teachers unions first.
And then, but then in Wisconsin, he was seen as this like martyr figure and you know, or not martyr, but like this hero.
Shaking things up.
That was his catapult to run for president. How do we talk to people in Wisconsin and say, that was a really BS idea?
So first of all, Walker lost, right? I mean, like, and I think a big part of the reason that Evers won in 2018 and won again, and you know, we've got Jill Enderle as state superintendent of education, is because enough people in the state do recognize how bad Republicans have been for public schools, right? And you know the real silver lining in this last election is look at how Democrats did in the legislature. I mean, our legislature is going to be much more accountable around public education issues. So I think number one, we're already doing it. I mean, you know, Democrats in this state, in my view, have done a much better job than they have nationally.
Yeah, I agree.
You've mentioned Ahmad. Ahmad's a great example of that. Yeah. I mean, the way he's able to talk about working class issues in a way that like resonates with people here, it's amazing. And so I think we are winning. And, you know, our state was the state that came closest, you know, within dramatically, huge headwinds that came closest to electing Kamala Harris. So I think in terms of the, you know, swing states and so like, what was the margin? Like 50,000?
It was under 1%.
Right. So like, I think we are doing it here. I think we need to keep doing it, but I think we're doing it. And I mean, Green Bay is a great example of that. I mean, look at Mayor Genrich, how, when he came out and really identified strongly as a Democrat in 2023, he won that election handily in the face of everything that they threw at him. So, you know, I think we're doing it in Wisconsin. We just need to do more of it.
Well, and that ties in with another thing I wanted to ask about, which is that at this moment, you know, after in the aftermath of the 2024 election, I think a lot of Democrats and progressives, both locally and nationally, are sort of feeling out in the wilderness right now. There's a lot of, you know, everybody has, like you were saying earlier, their hot take about, you know, why the election went the way it did and things like that. But I think a lot of folks are feeling despondent. You know, I saw somebody the other day writing on social media about how it feels like there's an earthquake and we're waiting for that. That's happened and we're waiting for the tsunami, that comes afterwards. So a lot of folks are feeling despondent and not sure what to do as we face the specter of this next term. What advice do you have? What thoughts do you have for folks who want to know what they can do to help?
All right. So here's the first thing. Okay. This is not the first time Americans have faced dark times. I mean, imagine being Frederick Douglass in the 1850s and wondering, is slavery ever going to be over? And pushing, the Union Army, pushing Lincoln to say like, we're going to make this about ending slavery. Imagine Americans in the 1930s, with the Great Depression, and coming out of that much stronger and freer and a more democratic country. And then imagine those civil rights protesters in Selma in 1965 mm-hmm. about to cross that bridge, knowing that there were white supremacists on the other side about to kick their heads in. I mean, that's literally what they knew was gonna happen. Mm-hmm. If those people in those instances can fight for what it really means to be an American, like, we can do that too. And what it means to be an American is to fight to make your country freer and more democratic and fairer. And that's what it means to be true Americans. And that's what we're going to fight for.
I love that. We're not going to drop the torch that the past generations have handed on us.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Yeah. And that's a big weight on our shoulders. Really. John Shelton, John Becker, thank you so much for joining us on the show. That was awesome.
Thanks for having me. It was great to be with you.
Yeah, we
got to
do that again.
A lot of fun. Happy holidays. Happy New Year, everybody.
Yeah, yes. Thank you. We'll be back with my thoughts here shortly.